ഓം നമോ ഭഗവത്തെ വാസുദേവായ. വി ആർ റീഡിംഗ് ഫ്രോം ഭഗവത്ഗീത ആസ് ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് ചാപ്റ്റർ 7 ടെക്സ്റ്റ് നമ്പർ 8-11. ദിസ് ചാപ്റ്റർ ഇസ് എൻടൈറ്റിൽഡ് ആസ് നോളജ് ഓഫ് ദി അബ്സല്യൂട്ട്.
രസോഹമപ്സു കൗന്തയ പ്രഭാസ്മി ശശിസൂരയോ പ്രണവ സർവവേദേഷു ശബ്ദഖേ പുരുഷം ഋഷു.
Of course, everyone repeat with me. Raso, rasoham apsu kaunteya
prabhasmi shashishurayo pranavah sarvavedeshu shabdhakhe purusham drishu.
And the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and ability in man. Osana Prutha, next text, text number 9. I am the original fragrance of the earth and I am the heat in fire. I am the life of all that lives and I am the penance of all ascetics. Verse number 10. O son of Prutha, know that I am the original seed of all existence, the intelligence of the intelligent and the prowess of all powerful men. Text number 11. I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life which is not contrary to religious principles, O Lord of the Bharatas. I'll read some part of the purport. The verse explains how the Lord is all pervasive by his diverse material and spiritual energies. The Supreme Lord can be preliminarily perceived by his different energies, and in this way he is realized impersonally. As a demigod in the sun is a person and is perceived by his all pervading energy, the sunshine. So the Lord, although in his eternal abode, is perceived by his all pervading diffusive energies. The taste of water is the active principle of water. No one likes to drink sea water because the pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on the purity of the taste, and this pure taste is one of the energies of the Lord. The light of the sun and the moon is also originally emanating from the Brahma Jyoti, which is the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. And pranava or the omkar, transcendental sound in the beginning of every Vedic hymn, addresses the Supreme Lord. Because the impersonalists are very much afraid of addressing the Supreme Lord Krishna by his innumerable names, they prefer to vibrate the transcendental sound omkar. But they do not realize that omkar is a sound representation of Krishna. The jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness extends everywhere. And one who knows Krishna consciousness is blessed. Those who do not know Krishna are in illusion, and so knowledge of Krishna is liberation and ignorance of him is bondage. Punya means that which is not decomposed. Punya is original. Everything in the material world has a certain flavor or fragrance. As the flavor and fragrance is in a flower or in the earth, in water, in fire, in air, etc. The uncontaminated flavor, the original flavor, which permeates everything, is Krishna. Similarly, everything has a particular original taste. And this taste can be changed by a mixture of chemical. So everything original has some smell, some fragrance and some taste. Bija means seed. Krishna is the seed of everything. There are various living entities, movable and inert. Birds, beasts, men and many other living creatures are moving living entities. Trees and plants, however, are inert. They cannot move, but only stand. Every entity is contained within the scope of 84 lakh species of life. Some of them are moving and some of them are inert. In all cases, however, the seed of their life is Krishna. The strong man's strength should be applied to protect the weak, not for personal aggression. Similarly, sex life, according to religious principle, dharma, should be for the propagation of children, not otherwise. The responsibility of parents is then to make their offspring Krishna conscious.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So here, Krishna, Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, is explaining the principle of all pervasiveness. There are three principles of the understanding of Godhood, personality of Godhead. One is the Brahman, the all pervasive energy of the Lord. And there is Paramatma. The difference between Paramatma and Brahman, Paramatma is also all pervasive, Brahman is also all pervasive. The difference is Paramatma has a form, Brahman doesn't have the form. And Bhagavan is a personality. He is everywhere by his influence. What is his influence? His influence is activities. The activities what he performs, he may perform his activities in one corner in a small village called Vrindavan. Where is Vrindavan? We see that the tendency to identify with someone based upon family, based upon village, based upon town, based upon state or a country is a common conditioning of a living entity. Oh, he's from my town. Like recently we were in one small village in Karnataka state. And one man from nowhere, a rickshawala, came and he said, you know, the judge, the Supreme Court judge, he belonged from this town. Identification. So even though Krishna was performing his pastime in Vrindavan, his activities are everywhere. Everybody knows about his pastime. We were discussing maybe about 20 years back, if you ask a South Indian, what is parota or kulcha, a Keralite living in a small village, he may not understand what kulcha is. Or if you ask a Punjabi, do you know neer dosa, he may not know. Why? Because they live so far from each other, so naturally their taste differs. But if you ask a Keralite or a Punjabi, Krishna, yes, he said Unni Krishna, Bal Krishna. It's the same thing. A Punjabi asks, he also knows. A Keralite will also know. Why? Because Krishna is all pervasive either by Brahman, either by Paramatma, or by Bhagavan, by his activities. So therefore the domain of being God conscious or not God conscious is not within our control. Our control is that whether we want to be directly connected to God or indirectly controlled by His energies. That choice we have. But the choice of I do not want to be in the place where God is controlling. Just like previously, there were many kings in India. Every town had a king. A small king controlled by a bigger king. And eventually the Chakravarti, the emperor who would be sitting in Delhi, Hastinapur, would control everything. So people had the choice, I don't like this king. Then you could go to another kingdom. If there is no religious king, then you go to another kingdom where the religious king is there. That choice was there. So one may say, I don't want to come under his control. You move out. Still people can do. You don't like India, you migrate, go from one place to another place. But one cannot say, and it is not possible, that I don't want to come under the control of God. I want to be in that place where God is not at helm of affair. I don't want to come under his control. I want to go to the country where there is atheism. They may believe that philosophy. They may make their mindset like that. But they cannot say that we are not under control. The control of God is everywhere. And Prabhupada therefore in the purport he explains, the jurisdiction of God's existence is everywhere. One cannot avoid it. Just because someone drops his family to the temple hall, you know, he may be standing outside. He said, you go, I don't want to come. Doesn't mean that he is out of the control of the influence of God. That is stupidity. One who is staying in India, he cannot say that I don't want to be under the control of the government law. If you are in India, you are controlled. If you want, you don't want. But still you are under control. So similarly here, Prabhupada explains, the choice is that to accept his control directly or accept his control indirectly. Srila Prabhupada, once he explained, when he was giving a talk, two young people came to the temple and one naturally, he bowed down. He offered his obeisances to the Lord. And one seeing his friend bow down, he stood like a bamboo. No, he didn't want to bow down. No, he became straight. And Prabhupada watched this and he said, now you voluntarily bow down or at death you'll be forced to bow down. You have to lie down. Lying is not your choice. But how do you want to lie? That is your choice. You want to lie down by offering lovingly obeisances to the Lord? Or you want to lie down by force? That choice you have. Otherwise, lying down or no lying down, that choice you do not have. One may say, how can God be so autocrat? How can He control like that? If it is a question of choice, I want to worship, I don't want to worship, everybody should be given that independence. Or worshipping, not worshipping, being under His control, not being under His control, that choice should be given. Why someone is forced like that? Of course not. The Lord does not force. Whether you are a devotee of the Lord or you are not devotee of the Lord, He still provides. The magnanimity of the Lord, the graciousness of the Lord, it may be seen. Sometimes people ask this question, why even after practicing spirituality, coming to the temple, you look very poor, and someone is not at all practicing God consciousness, finds to be very rich. The example people always give, why Americans, why Europeans are so rich compared to Indians? They are poverty stricken. That's a whole different history altogether. It is not because people worship God. Because they looted us. That's all. Very simple. It is not a philosophical question. Rather the historical question which took 100 years back. Macaulay himself writes, or some of his British colleagues, they wrote, when they came to India, this is about 150 or 200 years back. When they came to India, they said, there is not even one beggar in this country. You don't find any beggar in this country. The land is full of prosperity. The cows are giving milk in plenty. The schools are run by a teacher without charging anything. Hundreds of students are studying. They said, that's a very amazing place. So, it's not a question of why India is poor, because they're worshipping God. That's a very stupid and illogical argument. That means one who has not studied history properly, he will say like that. It has nothing to do with God. Because Lord's responsibility, it's not His responsibility, it's His grace, it's His kindness, His magnanimity. That whether you love Him, you hate Him, despise Him, dislike Him, you know, declare boldly that He does not exist. Even to speak those words, you need nourishment. You need food. You need intelligence. Where do you get that food from? That has to come from the Lord only. Srila Prabhupada said very, very simply that you may have hundreds of factories, but can you produce one grain of rice in your factory? Is it possible? Can you produce one grain of water? You may say oxygen and hydrogen makes water, but show it. You cannot. No rains. If it does not rain for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, people are looking in the sky. They can't manufacture in their factory. However much expert IT technicians are there, scientists are there, philosophers are there, best politicians are there, they cannot be able to do it. Therefore here, when Krishna says, Punya Gandha Prithvi Nam, now this is another opulence. Living in a smaller town, where there is a space between two houses, surrounded by a garden, when the first rain comes, what do you smell? You smell the fragrance of the earth. And that's what Krishna is saying. When the water comes, there is a fragrance. What happens in Bombay? All the sewage systems are filled, obnoxious smell comes. That is the difference between human creation and God's creation. One cannot, in the village, when you live, immediately, the first rain hits the ground, that smell, no perfume factory anywhere in the world, even the best perfumes of the French, cannot compare to the combination of Mother Earth and the rainwater. And it is freely available. You don't have to go to the shop. Taste of the water. Krishna is speaking very simply. When I drink the water, Prabhupada gives the example. Like someone showed us a small clipping, how in the deserts of Africa, in the deep jungles, these aborigines people, you know, they have to capture for their food, animals. And sometime for 1 day, 2 days, they don't get. So what do? They carry some salt with them. And they don't know where is the source of water. And they capture this baboon or monkey. And after capturing the monkey, they feed monkey salt. The monkey feels I got a food and keeps on eating the salt. And what is the nature of salt? The nature of salt, it makes you thirsty. And when you become thirsty, the capturer does not release him for one full day or few hours. And this monkey is so thirsty, screeching, and then he releases the monkey. Usually the monkeys are very careful not to show their the secret treasure of water. So what does the monkey do? Monkey starts running for the water without even considering who is following. And the hunter, he follows the monkey. And the monkey comes at the right place where there is a source of water. Why he has to come to the water? Because unless that water is there for that monkey, he cannot survive. That taste, it is not only the taste, rather it is the source of nourishment. Water nourishes physically, emotionally, intellectually, on all levels. Therefore, Krishna is speaking about this water. There is a taste of water. What is it? It's an intellectual understanding. It's a nourishing. Prabhupada told in America, because less water and more wine. So he said, when you drink your wine, doesn't mean that you are supporting them. He said, when you drink your wine, the taste of wine, you should know that is Krishna. But actually the quote of Shastra is, that when you drink water, what is it? The taste of water. When you add salt in the water, you can't drink it. If you add sugar in the water, you can't drink it. Then you have to make a lot of mixture. You have to add lemon, you have to add some salt, you have to add some black pepper. You have to add right amount of, that becomes a lemon juice. It is no more water. But if you want to drink water, what is it? Plain water. If somebody is thirsty, our internal senses demands, I want water. No Pepsi, no Coke, no lemon juice, just plain water. Because Krishna says, so intellectually you are convinced, when you drink water, what does it do? It quenches your thirst. Again, another example is given, that if you see a rose, now one can paint something looks like a rose, very beautiful, artist can paint a rose. But can he paint fragrance in the rose? Can he paint texture in the rose? Can he paint naturality in the rose? After all, it is an art. One has to appreciate. But the real artist, one who has made it, one is so unconscious about. We are quick to appreciate a man-made rose. Prabhupada gave another example. He said, people go to the auditorium, pay a lot of money to see a human being who is enacting like a dog, barking like a dog, you know, creating different kinds of noise like a bird. He's paying for it. And he says, wow, what a performance. But he said, just see, if you go in the morning in a small, nice atmosphere where there is a field, what do you hear in the morning? The birds are chirping. The cock is crowing. So this art, nobody appreciates. He said, that is called as unconsciousness. That is called as illusion. One is not appreciating God. So that texture, that fragrance, where does it come from? You take a seed or a small sapling of a tree. And then you just place it on the earth. Small ditch you make and you place it. And the plant takes roots, goes deep. And the leaves come. And suddenly you find nice flower coming. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then it is permeating the fragrance. If you go to Jaipur, there are these pink flowers, pink roses, which they make, you know, gulkand also. The flower retains the fragrance even in that gulkand, if that is a real good rose. When you walk around, you'll find the whole weather is permeated with that fragrance. The sapling had no fragrance. Sapling had no texture. Sapling has no color. It goes into the earth. You just do offer some water to Mother Earth. And what she provides? Your water and little sapling, she provides unlimited quantities of flowers. There is no bargain. There is sacrifice. There is no exploitation. She is not saying, okay, you give this much, then only I'll provide you. Just little sapling and little water and her body. It's her body, Mother Earth. And she's providing such wonderful flowers. Again, take for mango as an example. What a fruit. Srila Prabhupada said that fruit is coming from the heavens. The color, the texture, the fragrance and the taste. Where do you get it from? You get it from Mother Earth only. Who is providing it? A man can never make it. Therefore, in this verse or in this very chapter, how does it begin? This chapter begins because in the conclusion of the sixth chapter, Krishna told Arjuna, Tasmat Sarveshu, that at all point of time you become yogi. And of the yogis, the best yogi is one who is constantly in touch with Krishna, in touch with God, in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the question may be raised, how can one be a yogi? That is Gyan. The first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita is the principle of Gyan. And the next six chapter is the principle of Bhakti. And Krishna says to Arjuna, Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogan Yunjan Madashriya Asamshayam Samagramya Tatagyashri Tashrunu. Krishna is using adjectives to prove his point. That now you hear Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogan Yunjan Madashriya. I speak now and you hear attentively. How by hearing from me, you will come to know everything. Nothing remains to be known. A living entity has a limited capacity from his own physical point of view. But when he hears from God, he gets limitless capacity. That is another inconceivable potency. That how this inconceivable potency of the Lord makes us to hear from the Supreme Lord through His words, a limited living entity can hear unlimitedly. Nothing remains to be known. And how does He present it? He presents it most simply. Anybody can understand. By seeing a flower, by drinking little water, by smelling the fragrance which comes in the form of rains touching the Mother Earth. When you see the sunrise, when you see the moon rise, when you see the beautiful moon in the full Purnima day, what does it do? It gives the understanding that God is everywhere. Therefore, atheism is not a philosophy. It is not a science. It is obstination. It's a haunting of ghost. That no, God does not exist. You can't prove. Because to say that word, the very sound which comes from your mouth, God, we see there are so many people who want to speak, they want to glorify God, but they are deaf. There are people who want to see God's beautiful altar, nice deity, but they are blind. There are people who want to hear about God, but they are deaf. They can't hear, they can't speak, and they can't even see. But those who have the power to see, those who have the power to speak, what do? They use the power of speech, the power of sight, for what? For defying the existence of God. So therefore, Krishna, being very kind, very logically, very reasonably, he is presenting this to Arjuna, making Arjuna as an instrument. Lord makes his devotee as an instrument, and he provides this knowledge. Therefore, the question of good or bad depends upon our application. One may use the same Bhagavad Gita for a wrong purpose. It is explained, you take a cow, feed her grass, take care of her. You can milk the cow. There is a possibility of milking the cow. Or you drain all the milk and you can milk. You can actually not milk. You remove blood from her udder. Same place, if you extend, when the milk stops flowing, what will come? The blood will also come. Same source. It depends upon what you want. The scriptures are also like that. You can receive milk of knowledge, or you can receive blood also. Just like when the Pandavas, they are the best example. They had the power to see God in every aspect. Just imagine they are thrown to the forest, one was for 12 years and 1 year incognito, continue to live in the forest, unknown to anybody. Now how can you take it? 12 years of forest, and they are not ordinary people. Lived in palatial buildings, and abruptly at one fine day, they are asked to live along with their wife. So what is their understanding? Yudhishthira Maharaj says, this is not forest, this is the visiting of the holy places. We are not going to the forest where there are animals, rather we are visiting the holy place. And then the next parva in the Mahabharata, which calls as Vana Parva, the forest canto is filled with different holy places. Now that is the perception of the Pandavas. They did not see it, oh, we are missing the palace. And while the Kurus, the Kauravas, were living in the palace, and they were looking, what the Pandavas must be doing now. They did not enjoy their palace also. They were suffering, thinking that even in the forest they must be flourishing. And therefore, one day, Duryodhan told his father, he said, my dear father, I want to go to the forest to count our cows. Duryodhan knew what he wants to do. Dhritarashtra also knew what he wants to do. He gave the sanction. Okay, go. But what was their intention? Their intention was to look what the Pandavas are doing. And make them feel, look, we are enjoying. Even though he was concerned what the Pandavas are doing. He went out there in the forest, trying to cause harm to the Pandavas. But he was captured like an animal. Duryodhan was captured like an animal. And they threw Duryodhan in the at the feet of Yudhishthira Maharaj. Just imagine. You hate somebody and you are at his disposal, at his mercy. And Gandharva said, only Yudhishthira gives you forgiveness, I will release you. And Yudhishthira had to say, my dear brother, why do you act like this? And what an insult for Duryodhan. He was suicidal, he wanted to commit suicide. Just see, all that opulence, all that wealth caused him to make a decision of committing suicide. Life is not preparation to die. Some people live hoping to die. That is not life. Oh, anyway we are going to do it tomorrow, day after tomorrow. Life is not to die. That is suicide. Life is meant to live. And live in proper consciousness. As taught by Krishna. As Prabhupada explains, that one should try to extend one's life so that one can practice spiritual life. Otherwise, simply living for death is not life. Just going through all the activities of life, being born, growing, going to school, making money, then again getting married, raising children. What is this? Everybody does it. It's a flow. Millions of people are doing. There is no greatness in that. Simply doing these activities. Therefore, Mahabharata explains, Ahar Nidra Bhaya Maitunam Cha Samanyeta. Eating, mating, defending and sleeping, he said, Saman, it's common to everybody. Rather, other living entities are more expert in that. They can eat as much as they want and they don't go to any doctor. There is no indigestion. They can have unlimited sleep. They don't have to take sleeping pill. The sensual pleasure, they have unlimited. Therefore, Mahabharata makes it so simple that when you live simply to grow like anybody else, samanyeta, very sarcastically saying that. What is this? Simply living like animals. No big deal. So that is what? That you live to die. No, we don't live to die. We don't live to die like ordinary living entities. Rather, we die, we live and we die. We die so that we can live eternally. And that is the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. We live to die and by dying we live immortal life, eternal life. And that is what Krishna is presenting to Arjuna. And what is the field? Just see, one can be totally unconscious of God even while in the temple. Of course, we have a shoekeeper in our temple. Many temples you may not have it. You may come to the temple and be worrying about your costly shoes. Oh my God, what will happen? Right in the temple, watching the Lord, but mind is somewhere else. This could happen. But Arjuna was right on the battlefield. That's not a very a place where you can remember God. Violent place. Millions of soldiers are there. You can't be inattentive. If you're little unalert, then you could be killed. But in that very place, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where the battle was about to begin, what do you see? Very coolly, Krishna and Arjuna sit for a discussion. But this discussion is not like armchair philosophy, sitting in a restaurant and drinking half cup tea. No, this discussion was a serious situation. Arjuna needed it, he was desperate, and Krishna sang. There is a story in the Mahabharata. The battle was over, Pandavas reigned the earth, Yudhishthira Maharaj became the king. And one day Arjuna was strolling with Krishna. And he said, my dear Lord, can you speak the Bhagavad Gita once again? Krishna said, no, this is not the situation. There has to be a right situation for me to speak. You are not desperate. You are not in trouble. He said, it's not a casual discussion. Bhagavad Gita is not a casual discussion. It was question of life and death for Arjuna. And it was question of dharma or adharma for Krishna. He was using Arjuna to establish dharma. And he said, I don't want to fight. And Krishna had to speak Bhagavad Gita. And then he's speaking, giving all his example, talking about the rose, talking about Mother Earth. Now what is battlefield of Kurukshetra? It is not soaked with water. Rather, it is soaked with blood of millions of soldiers. Even in that, Krishna is teaching Arjuna how to see God. One can see God and deny God. One can see no God and actually accept and experience the existence of Lord. Like in Bengal, there was a big landlord. Sometimes you hear so many pravachans. Nothing changes. Everything remains the same. The speaker remains the same. The audience remains the same. One time a landlord, he was strolling on his horse, a big landlord in Bengal. And on the river bank or in the well, he saw many women had gathered to collect water. It was an evening hour and they were expecting rain. So one lady was telling another lady, she spoke in Bengali, Tada tadi kor vel jaben. What is this? Tada tadi kor vel jaben. Do it fast. Fetch your water fast, or I need to fetch water because it's raining. But she didn't speak all this because the environment was like that, she could understand. Now what is this word? Has nothing to do with God consciousness. There is no spirituality in this. It is an ordinary, desperative word so that she should reach her home without getting wet. Now this man heard his words. What did he hear? That do fast, time is passing. It rang in his ears continuously. He went home. He couldn't sleep. Whole night he was up. He kept on hearing this word. Tada tadikar, tada tadikar, tada tadikar. Vel jaben. And next morning he told his family member. They were already responsible, grown up. Children were married. He told his family, the time is up. The indication has come to me. I'm going to Vrindavan. And next day, instantly, he took a train. He came to Vrindavan. And for the rest of his life, he stayed there, worshipping the Lord. His wife also came. So for someone, even the ordinary word can cause spiritual revolution. And for someone, the entire Vedas, Upanishads, like Srila Prabhupada one time met few scholars of the Vedas. And he asked them, what do you think about God? Who is God? They said, Swamiji, that's a very difficult question. He said, to understand who is God, what is God, he said, it's a very difficult question. Just see, for someone, the ordinary word can give God realization. For somebody else, group of scholars studying Vedas, they say it's very difficult. And Prabhupada called some small children. And he showed them the jar of gulab jamun. He would always give his guest gulab jamun. If you don't agree, like one American came to his room and he was trying to preach to him. Nothing made sense to him. He was so dull. He didn't understand anything. Body, soul, intelligence, nothing he understood. Then Prabhupada ultimately gave him a gulab jamun. He said, eat this gulab jamun. At least you can understand this. He ate the gulab jamun. He liked it. He said, can I get one more? So Prabhupada asked him, why you want one more? He said, I will put this gulab jamun in my whiskey. So that was his intelligence. He could only understand gulab jamun up to that much. But of course, he got purified by eating prasad from the hands of a pure devotee. The point we are making, when all these children came, Prabhupada said, who is God? He didn't ask, Krishna is God? He didn't make that statement where the answer lies. He said, who is God? They said, Krishna is God. Prabhupada gave them the gulab jamun. He asked another child. He said the same thing. There was no debate. There was no controversy. They didn't discuss, hey, who is God? What do you think? No. They got the gulab jamun and gulab jamun gave them the answer. They knew what answer to give. They gave that answer to Prabhupada. They collected their gulab jamun. He said, the children are the essence of the Vedas. And that's what Krishna said again in the Bhagavad Gita. Ki, the end of knowledge, the end of Vedas, is that one should know God. One should have that relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Either by Gyan, either by Ashtanga Yoga, or either by Bhakti Yoga. But what Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita is the recommendation of Bhakti Yoga. Because Gyan Marg involves our intelligence. Ashtanga Marg involves our mind. But heart, as long as heart rules us. Ultimately what rules? Not the intelligence. Not the mind. Like in the Mahabharata, Dronacharya knew intelligently that my son is not qualified to receive Brahmastra. He had decided not to give Brahmastra to his son. He only wanted to give it to Arjuna. But when his son desperately said, no, I want it. What happened? His intelligence was covered by his heart. His heart ruled him. And he made a wrong decision. We are talking on a mundane platform. So similarly, unless our heart is ruled by God, simply intelligently understanding, sensually understanding, intellectually understanding. Srila Prabhupada said it is like licking a honey bottle from outside. However aggressively you lick that bottle, it does not give you the taste of honey. Rather, your tongue will be pained. You may get hurt also. But if you do that small act of removing the jar's lid and take few drops in your hand and lick the honey, then the endeavor of the tongue is fulfilled. So similarly, when the heart is allowed to be ruled by the process of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare, and by hearing the divine pastimes of the Lord, by reading Mahabharata, by reading Ramayana, these are the books of our rich Indian culture, the Vedic heritage. And anyone who makes an endeavor to read these books, it is guaranteed that they will bring tears from the eyes. They will rule our heart. They will change our heart. Therefore, one British scholar, when he came to India, when he saw the people reading scriptures, reading Ramayana, Mahabharata, he said, as long as this book is there, he said, these people cannot be converted. It is not possible. They could convert the whole South America. They don't know what their culture is. Whole European culture. Christianity is not European culture. It's an Eastern religion. The whole European culture was converted. They don't know what their origin is. They say, we are Christian, but what was their origin? But the Vedic culture, how many years? 800 years of Mughal, their attacks, and in 200 years of Britishers' attack, trying to change the whole culture. Rather than changing, many took the Bhagavad Gita. One of the greatest Indologists, his whole purpose, Max Muller, if you read his books, filled with, you know, partiality, but at the end of his life, he couldn't handle it. He said, I am not being fair. And he told his wife, he said, if I have to come back, now when you talk about coming back, then you don't believe in Christianity. Because according to Christian concept, there is no question of reincarnation. You lie down there in the burial ground till the final judgment comes. When he said, if I have to come back, that means even though you try to dismantle the scriptures of the Vedas, you are influenced by that. Therefore, you are talking, if I come back. He didn't stop there. He said, if I come back, I want to be born as a Brahmana, means a Vedic scholar, somewhere in North India. And that was the power of the Vedic culture. Some say, you know, we don't know how far it is true, that Alexander's commander-in-chief, his daughter, she got initiated into Vaishnavism. So he came to conquer, but he was conquered by the culture, without even trying to convert. Just giving the books, like Srila Prabhupada sent his disciples all over the world. What did he do? Giving them the books. And if anyone actually reads Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, Ramayana, it is guaranteed. What do? They rule. Lord Ram, Lakshman, Lord Krishna, you know, the characters of the Pandavas, they are so powerful and prominent, they capture. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga means what? When your heart is ruled by God, Krishna or Ram, then your intelligence will be ruled by them. Your senses will be ruled by them. Your whole life will be ruled by them. And then, the jurisdiction of God consciousness is experienced directly, other than indirectly experienced. Now we are experiencing it indirectly. It's like someone, you know, calling you, and you can't figure out who is calling. It's very irritating, right? If you are in some place, and somebody is calling your name, hey, look here, and you're looking for him, and you're not able to find him. It's very irritating. Means you know that person, you have heard about him, but you are not able to see him, and he's calling you continuously from this direction, from that direction, from this direction. Then you start denying his existence. You say, who is this guy? I don't care. I don't want to see him, because you tried, but you couldn't find. So similarly, indirect experience of God is like this. You are hearing his voice everywhere, but because you are not able to connect to him, what happens? We start denying. I don't care. But when he comes in the form of his holy name, when he comes in the forefront, when he shows himself to us, when he sees beauty, when we experience his fragrance, when we see his smile, and when we chant the divine names of Lord, then that very experience, indirect experience which was causing irritation, causes pleasure. That's how one has to experience God consciousness directly, not indirectly. Because indirect experience is not very tasty or sweetful. But direct experience allows us to see God and His energy. And therefore, the natural consequence is that the all-pervasiveness of Lord, a very important point Prabhupada makes, the jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness is everywhere. That was our very point. Therefore, Krishna told Arjuna, you can't avoid this battle. Even if you go to the forest, your very nature will capture you. And what is your nature? In that body, Arjuna's nature, he was a Kshatriya. A businessman, wherever he goes, like that story is there, one sadhu was trying to convince a businessman. You have done enough business, you have made enough money, why don't you take to spirituality? But he couldn't. No amount of education, one-to-one preaching, like a private tuition, you know, didn't work him. So sadhu said, let me give him a personal experience. So took him to the cremation ground near Banaras. And what did he see? So many bodies are being burnt. One, two, three people bring, ultimately at Banaras, their spiritual consciousness revives at the time of death. Because on the bank of Ganga, if you are burnt, you get to the higher destination. That is the faith. So he saw so many bodies are being burnt. He started crying tears. There were tears in his eyes. Sadhu felt, at last I'm able to convince him. He said, how are you now? How did you understand? He said, what a miserable. He said, why at this stage of my life I got this realization? I should have started a factory of selling wood. I could have made more money. That is called as suffering indirect God consciousness. But the direct God consciousness is accepting the process. Seeing the Lord, worshipping the Lord, chanting His names and reading His divine pastimes. And then one experiences greater pleasure and our heart will be ruled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? We'll have Kirtan now. Somebody has a question?
You mentioned this, that heart is more powerful than the mind and the intelligence. But sometimes we see that we nourish the intelligence by the Shastras. We hear that we should nourish our intelligence by the Shastras. So when we read and we hear, that knowledge and that nourishment, it goes to the heart of the intelligence. How does it work? I mean, basically, is there any distinguishing, like, either, like, how do you understand?
The character of intelligence is to discriminate, distinguish, you know, store information, reproduce information. One may know everything about certain subject. Okay. That doesn't mean that he has put his heart into that. He has put his intelligence in that. Experience requires relationship. You can't relate with knowledge. You have to experience knowledge. And how do you experience? You don't experience with your intelligence. You experience with your heart. Just like even knowledge, to receive that knowledge, it all depends upon who is teaching. Any child will tell, oh, this was my teacher, very good teacher. Very good teacher means what? Because respect, affection brings respect. Respect brings attention. Attention brings memorization. And memory brings storage of information for a long time. And that brings gratitude. That's how the gradual progression is there of knowledge. And where does it begin from? A personality. The whole Vedic system of education is that a teacher is there. And the teacher personally trains you. Like today, Braj Bihari was speaking about that. So therefore, even to receive knowledge, you need a teacher. And you have to respect that teacher. You can't go to the teacher with a very clear intention, I'm going to defy whatever he says. You don't learn anything. You only gain the happiness of your false ego, that I defied, I caused so much trouble to him. That's okay. That's what you got. the happiness for causing trouble. As they say, when Bhima was killing Dushyasan, just imagine, this is called as perversiveness. No, perverted. Bhima is grabbing Dushyasan. He is not able to breathe also, because Bhima placed his foot on his throat. And he asked him, you know, which hand was that which dared to touch Draupadi? So when Dushyasan saw anger in Bhima, that Bhima is so disturbed, is so angry, remembering that incident, what he had done for Draupadi. So Dushyasan is finding pleasure. What is his pleasure? That I am causing anger in the mind of Bhima. That is my pleasure. He is dying. He is about to be killed. But his pleasure is that, wow, I am giving pain to Bhima. And all other soldiers, Duryodhan's party, they were taking pleasure to see Bhima getting angry. So when Bhima looked around, he said, my God, these people are so pervert. In suffering, they are trying to take pleasure. So that is what you gain. No, if you try to trouble your teacher, the mundane education nowadays, they don't care to respect. Nowadays people say, don't tell me to call my, you know, the teachers also tell, don't call me by, you know, don't give me respectful address, call me by name. That is not proper container. The knowledge may come there, but the culture will not come. What is Vedic culture? There has to be respect for the teacher. When there is a respect is there, how does that respect come? The respect comes for affect, because of affection. And when that respect is there, naturally you are attentive. When that attentiveness, when you are attentive, then retention is there. When you retain, the memory is there. And what is one of the sign of the memory? Sign of memory is that gratitude. Even, you know, when you are quite old, you will remember your second standard teacher, third standard teacher. Why? Both, the good and bad one. Bad one because they gave bad experience, good one because they gave good experience. So how is it begins? It begins from, they captured your heart. So what Krishna does, if you don't want to give your heart, at least give your intelligence. Try my knowledge. Read my book. If you read my book with your intelligence, you may approach a bona fide spiritual master. You may develop relationship with him. The person doesn't know. He says, I'm not going to give my heart, but I will try to understand. But what is it? It's the heart of the Lord only. When Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, it was not an intellectual analysis. Song of God. Bhagavad Gita means song of God. And when there is a song, you can't sing without putting your heart into singing. Therefore, music is so powerful. Music is so powerful that you don't sing music with your intelligence. Oh, I'm going to chant or sing reasonably without putting my heart. Then nobody will listen. Only when there is heart. And what is Krishna's Bhagavad Gita? Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita not from his mouth. His heart acted, it became a mouth. Angani, yasya shakalendra vrittimanti. Lord can perform all of his activities from all of his senses. Therefore, it is not spoken by Krishna, his heart was singing. Arjuna was fortunate to hear the heartbeat of the Lord. Therefore, it is a song of Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, Arjuna could never forget. And therefore, Prabhupada says that this Bhagavad Gita was spoken only for 40 minutes. How long Krishna spoke? He spoke only 40 minutes. We can't hear even half of the Bhagavad Gita verse in 40 minutes. And Arjuna could hear all that in 40 minutes. And Prabhupada said, just see, even after 40 millions of years, of course Bhagavad Gita was spoken 5,000 years ago, but before that, Krishna had spoken it to sun god millions of years ago, repeated. He said, just see, 40 minutes knowledge gave, after millions of years also still, those who want to hear the song of God and get affected by that, they're still listening. So therefore, knowledge has to come from a person who has a heart. Only then knowledge works. Otherwise, many people are there. There is one big scholar. No? He debates with some Hindu scholars, quoting Bhagavad Gita. But how can you appreciate? Because the whole intention of reading that Shastra to find faults. Incarnation of Shishupal. When you have a Shishupal tendency, Shishupal, what to speak of hearing from God, he was seeing God, but there was no appreciation. He was only waiting, when will I defy this personality? And how did he defy? What kind of abusive words he used? So therefore, simply having access to Vedas, having access to Shastra is not sufficient. What you have to do? You have to at least open little heart. And the Guru transfers his knowledge, which is coming from the heart. Then you can apply your intelligence. Then it makes sense. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita is song of God. Vedas is song. Bhagavatam is a song. Chaitanya Charitamrita is a song. Ramayana, what a song it is. And how did it come? The whole revelation of Ramayana for Valmiki Muni, you know, he came out of compassion when he saw this crouched bird being pierced by a hunter. He said, how can you do it? The way he spoke, how can you do it? It was a song. No, he didn't like it. So he objected the hunter that, how can you do it? And then he felt, how can I speak like that? Why am I so harsh? But then the revelation came. No. You have spoken this, the curse to that hunter. He said, that very verse will be the way you will compile Ramayana. It is full of description. It is kavyatmak. It is poetry. And what to speak of poetry connected to the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra? Even 50 years back, that's what Prabhupada said. What the Britishers could not do, what the Mughals could not do, was done by the television. Because even 50, I remember when I was growing, I was fortunate to not have a television in our town till I finished my 10th standard. And life was more fun, more interaction with friends, more cooperation with friends. Now the television, the video game, what does it do? It makes you no friends. Somebody sent me an article. They say, how people spend their time? They come for a party. They want to spend time with each other. They sit. They shake their hands. And then they order. And both people take a mobile phone and keep talking to somebody else. They have come together to talk to each other, spend time with each other. But what they are doing? He is talking to somebody else. Another guy is talking to somebody else. Means they are not there with each other. They are with somebody else. When they go and meet that person, and they will call somebody else. But I remember when we were growing, write regularly every second month, there would be Harikatha. And the whole 4 or 5 streets will be filled with people. Thousands of people. This was in 80s. Now they have a Harikatha and 4 old people are sitting. Why? Because there is a better engagement in the form of television. At least they feel like that. So unfortunate. They destroyed the culture. Yesterday we had to go and see one nice hall because we want to arrange a program. And there was the Indian classical kachari was going on. And very encouraging to see that even in such city like Bombay, even people, not only old people, even the young people, even those people are listening to, the Hindustani Sangeet. Because if you give your ears to that, it's still great. It has such a depth of culture. And in that depth of culture, if there is a glorification of God, glorification of Krishna, then it just churns your heart. And in this way, when you spend your life chanting Hare Krishna, you chant in Japa, you chant Hare Krishna in Ragas. Just see how Krishna is all pervading. You can read about Krishna, you can chant like a mantra, you can sing like a mantra. Now we will experience that. We'll chant Hare Krishna in whatever Ragas our scriptures have provided. And in this way, we can experience pleasure and give pleasure to Krishna. Bhakti's pleasure is that you enjoy first and you give it afterwards Krishna. Krishna is ready to take our remnants. Which great personality is willing to take somebody else's jhuta? When you chant Hare Krishna, first you experience the pleasure. And then it goes to God. It should be other way around. When you cook prasad, when you cook bhoga, when he's cooking, he's always thinking, how will I provide this to devotees? No, one should not be thinking like that. But Krishna doesn't mind it. He said, as long as you enjoy and you also share your enjoyment with me, I don't mind. Therefore, Prabhupada writes, do not compete with God, cooperate with God. If you try to compete with God, God will be destroyed. Because that we will study again in the Bhagavad Gita. Among the gambler, he is the best. If you want to gamble, and you want to gamble with God, he will be ruined, he will be wiped out. But if you cooperate with him, then you prosper and enjoy. So I will stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.